Brother Booker Dowji, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. How are you, Habibi?
Alhamdulillah, and yourself?
Alhamdulillah, kullu tamam.
Arabic is improving. All those tours are paying dividends, huh? Story that caught your eye this week.
Well, before I go there, do you think if I had to work at the Ilangeni, I'll have to wear a hairnet?
Not at all.
Don't start with me, okay?
There's nothing that can fall off. It is all fallen off.
I think working there will be a hair-raising experience, don't you think?
Yeah. Right. For some of us, not for others.
Okay, before we look at the weird and wonderful stories that made it into the media, let me first tell you about what happened after my last encounter with the terror of Sparks Road, and that, of course, is Halima Kala. You know, after I visited her, I spoke about it about a week or so, I think last week, I went home and was just casually talking to my Ruksana while she was cooking in the kitchen about this and that, just some casual conversation. You know what? I should have kept my big mouth shut. I said, I went to visit Halima Khala today, and she said that she hadn't seen me for the whole of Ramadan. And she said that I didn't even bring her any halim, eh? Well, there was a 10-second silence, and then I was hit with the question, an ice-cold question. So why didn't you take any halim for her? Dear listeners, how do you answer a question like that? Well, I tried to say something in my defense, but the words just didn't come out. And then she continued, such a nice old lady. She must have been feeling to have some halim. I see that the knife was turning, Maulana. You'll get sawab if you help old people, don't you know? Well, later after supper, she was still busy in the kitchen. And I just casually asked, what are you doing? She said, I just made some puri patta. You must take it in the morning and give it to her. Now that was mission impossible. As I drove to my office in Overport, I wondered what to do. Maybe I should just give the puri patta to that lady wearing the abaya at the robots in Brickfield Road. And of course, that still qualifies for sawab, eh? But I knew what would happen. I will go home to face the question. So what did Halima Khala say when you gave it to her? Dear, dear listeners of Radio Islam, Ruksana's honors degree in psychology is a weapon you don't mess with at all. Before I can even answer, she can read my face. For example, if we are driving in town on a Sunday and the thought enters my head, hey, maybe we can pop into that computer and electronics fair for maybe a few hours. Before I can suggest it, she will turn and look at me, smile and say, no, I don't think so. And therefore, I was not going to give the puri patta to that lady at the traffic lights. Halima Khala was busy peeling gadra beans as I approached her. She was sitting on her bench in the veranda. And so I went and gave her. I gave her the puri patta, and she was so happy. You got such a nice wife, Dowji. How come fella like you got so nice, Bairi, eh? I said salams, and I was walking a few steps to leave, but escape was impossible. Dowji, wait, tell me something. I said, yes, Kala, what do you want to know? And she said, tell me, Dowji, who is this fellow from Pakistan who is making problems? Everybody is looking for him. I was very curious, so I said, which fellow, Kala? And she answered, my nephew Imran was here yesterday. I wanted him to go buy bread for me, but his friends came and parked in front and were hooting for him. He rushed out telling me, sorry, Kala, I have to go with my friends. I asked him where he's going, and he said, he's going with his friends to look for Pokemon. Tell me, who is Pokemon or what he did, eh? I stood there speechless. Then I rushed out telling her, Kala, I'm also going to look for Pokemon. And I ran for my life. Anyway, the big story for the past week was, of course, the elections. And, of course, the focus was on the hiding that the ANC got.
Mm.
That shocked many people. Most people placed the blame squarely on Zuma. The call was for him to go. And now, dear listeners of Radio Islam, I have breaking news for you. Are you ready? Zuma was put into the rubbish bin. Yes, you heard right. Zuma ended up in the garbage bag, one of those black plastic ones. And seriously, I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. And guess what? Only an old white lady was concerned about him. So what do you think of that, eh? No, I haven't been smoking anything. Okay, let me put you out of your misery. Zuma is actually a 90-year-old tortoise living in central London. Its owner, Sarah Joiner, was worried when she couldn't find Zuma and feared that he may have crawled into a garbage bag that the collectors had already taken away. So she frantically contacted the City Council of Westminster, and then the search began. And just before the truck was about to empty its load, Mrs. Joiner and the council staff stopped it, and using thermal imagery camera, they searched through 10 tons of garbage. That's about 1,000 refuse bags. And after 2.5 hours, they found the tortoise, and everyone lived happily ever after. By the way, the full name of Zuma, the tortoise, was Montezuma. I wonder if this story is going to give an idea maybe to the EFF to put Zuma into a garbage bag. But you know what, Mullah? Let me tell you this. You know, I feel very sorry for him, our president. I wonder what's going to happen now. You know, in the old days, our leader knew exactly how to deal with any problem that came up. No matter how serious, he always dealt with it in this way. Machine warm, machine warm. Now, next story. I have mixed feelings about the next story.
Hmm.
Faizan Patel and his new wife, Sana, they both from New Delhi, and they got married. They phoned the honeymoon, they planned their honeymoon. It was a holiday in Europe. And they paid the travel company. Then disaster struck. Sana lost her passport. The travel agent refused to give them a refund. So instead of losing all the money, Faizan went on the honeymoon alone. Yes, right now he is touring Europe all alone. But you know what? There's a happy ending to the story. And here's the latest from the British Telegraph newspaper. It says, earlier this week, Faizan tweeted a photo of himself traveling on a train with a picture of Sana's face. His lonely honeymoon started to garner attention on social media, and he was thoroughly surprised a few hours later when he received a tweet from Sushma Swaraj, India's Minister of External Affairs, offering to help. And the tweet said, ask your wife to contact me. I will ensure that she is with you on the next seat. And while it looked like high-level government intervention might reunite the forlorn honeymooner with his bride, it then appeared that Sana might not be able to get a visa until after the honeymoon was over. And here's another tweet. Thanks to Sushma Swaraj, the passport almost issued. Now the problem is the next available date at the VFS is on Thursday. However, her visa application has now been submitted, and Faizan is hoping Sana will be able to catch up with him in Florence. So, they lived happily ever after.
Now, if we look internationally, there's more bad news about killings and terror killings, terror attacks every week, latest new shootings in Thailand, innocent people getting killed again. We're having this periodically now.
You know, Maulana, the widely held definition of terrorism, as we all know, is the deliberate killing, the deliberate targeting of civilians. So, just under a week ago, the 6th of August, was the anniversary of a terrorist crime that took place 71 years ago. A huge crime against humanity, perhaps the greatest terrorist act. Let me read something to you very quickly. On August 6, 1945, we must always remember this. This greatest terrorist act in history. on August 6, 1945, an American B-29 bomber named the Enola Gay left the island of Tinian for Hiroshima, Japan. The uranium-235 gun-type bomb named Little Boy exploded at 8:16 a.m. In an instant, 80,000 to 140,000 people were killed and 100,000 more were seriously injured. The blast's wave shattered windows for a distance of 10 miles and was felt as far away as 37 miles. Hiroshima had disappeared under a thick, churning foam of flames and smoke. The co-pilot, Captain Robert Louis, commented, "My God, what have we done?" And then on August 9th, 1945, another American B-29 bomber called Boxcar left Tinian carrying Fat Man, that's the name of the bomb, a plutonium implosion-type bomb. The bomb exploded at 11:02 a.m. over the narrow Urikami Valley northwest of downtown Nagasaki. Of the 286,000 people living in Nagasaki at the time of the blast, 74,000 people were killed and another 75,000 sustained severe injuries. The killing of innocent civilians is defined as terrorism, but if states do it, then somehow it doesn't fit this definition. Now, let me tell you about something related to the subject of terrorism, something that I heard a few weeks ago when a leading social commentator... But hang on, let me just bring it to today, what happened today. In other words, in the last week or so, one day after Saudi warplanes killed 9 civilians in an airstrike against a grocery store in Yemen's Nahum district, a new round of airstrikes was reported against the capital city of Sana'a, with today's target a potato chip factory. At least 13 civilians, mostly women, who worked at the factory were killed. And you never see that in the headlines, do you? One person will get killed in America, one person maybe in Paris or somewhere, and it'll be headlines for the whole week. Nobody worries about what's happening in Yemen. As I said, let me tell you about something related to this subject of terrorism, something that I heard a few weeks ago when a leading social commentator, an intellectual, an author, he has written many books on religion. One of them is called There Is No God But God, in capital letters, of course. He's a religious studies scholar, a producer, and a TV host. He is a member of the American Academy of Religion, the Society of Biblical Literature, and the International Quranic Studies Association. He's a professor of creative writing at the University of California. And his name is, I heard this guy many times. He's very, very, very smart. I heard, and whenever somebody threw any questions at him on the networks like BBC or CNN or anywhere, and grilled him about Islam and Muslims, he very, very coolly hit the whatever was thrown at him for 6. And his name is Reza Aslan, and he lives in the United States. I heard him a few weeks ago being asked on CNN about why there is so much of negative feelings about Islam in America. And he gave an answer that really cleared up the issue for me personally. He said that there are around 360 million Americans, and there are about 6 million Muslims in America. So they make up about just 1.6% of the whole population. So most ordinary Americans don't meet a Muslim, let alone interact with them. There is no engagement at all. So when a Christian person carries out an act of terrorism, then because most Americans are Christians, they know, this is important, they know that this act has nothing to do with Christianity, because as Christians, they know what Christianity is all about. Are you with me? Did you get it, listeners? But if a Muslim carries out an attack of terrorism in America, then they, that is the Christians, get their information from the media and other places about Islam and Muslims, And so they have little or no idea about whether the act is inspired by the teachings of Islam or not. Do you get it? Briefly, because they are Christians, they know that Christianity does not teach or condone an act of violence carried out by a Christian. Because they are Christians, they don't know that Islam rejects the acts of terrorism carried out by a Muslim. And in fact, because they usually get the information secondhand, so to speak, they believe that Islam itself condones this. This is what Islam is in their minds. Now that's quite a thought-provoking perspective. Nemolana?
Mm. Terrorism in South Africa.
Dear listeners of Radio Islam, I have breaking news for you. No other media has reported it yet, so you are hearing it for the first time right here. And it's big news. The Islamic State, or ISIS, has just released a statement that the Tulsi twins were directly recruited by this organization to carry out acts of terrorism in South Africa. So there you are, folks. Confirmed once and for all. No more debate. And that should bring the whole court case to an immediate halt. The statement said the following. We, from the Islamic Caliphate, the land of peace and love, milk and honey, the land free of infidels and other assorted evildoers, do hereby confirm that these two twin brothers, these brave, fearless mujahideen, were recruited by us in order to strike fear into the hearts of the kuffar. We also want to emphasize that we supplied these brave warriors for Islam with the weapons to carry out their attacks, namely two paintball guns and the protective jackets and also one stun grenade. The weapons of mass destruction, these weapons of mass destruction were smuggled to them from Iraq with great difficulty. We hope and pray that these great defenders of the deen come out of jail so that they can carry out their holy mission. End of statement. Now, I'm sure, dear listeners, you said, wow, when you heard that. Even my dog said, bow wow. As you know, our wonderful anti-terrorism force found a photograph of the terrorist twins posing with the paintball gun and the protective jacket. The arresting officer also found detailed instructions on their computer about how to carry out the attacks. This is what was said, the instructions that came from ISIS. South Africa's economy has to be destroyed. It is a rainbow nation, and therefore paintballs of different colors have to be used. The plan is to fire black paintballs onto whites to make them black, and white paintballs onto blacks. In this way, the original color of the people will change. Therefore, it will be difficult to identify who is white and who is black. And so there will be chaos, as affirmative action will fail, BEE will fail, and the minority groups will be given entry into medical school. And so the economy will suffer great damage, far worse than the firing of Nene, and the country will be brought to its knees. Long live the twin brothers, long live. So dear listeners,
oh,
that's the plan that the brothers had to carry out. Now, a leading terrorism expert by the name of Professor Hussein Sherlock Colombo reacted immediately to the news. He is the author of the... Are you there, Maulana?
Are you pressing the buttons?
No, I don't know. Somebody is trying to sabotage this call. You see? Can you see how much they have infiltrated everything? So, Professor Hussein Sherlock Colombo is the author of the best-selling book on terrorism entitled There is a Jihadist Under Every Bed. There is a Jihadist Under Every Bed. And in reacting to this story, This is what he said. There is no doubt in my mind that these two brothers plan to carry out terrorist attacks throughout South Africa, and also that they are members of ISIS. Can you hear me, Molan?
No, let's just try and get you back on the clearer line.
Okay.
One that's not sabotaged. That's Amy Dowji. We are approaching the end of the program. He's talking about the Tulsi twins and the whole issue of terrorism in South Africa. Seems like there's some gremlin that crept into the system. There's some sort of a problem. Let's see if we can get him on a clearer line, inshallah, then we'll be able to take the discussion further. And then obviously, still to come is the light at the end of the tunnel. Many people look forward to that light at the end of the tunnel. That's where he cracks his joke for the week, and he gets cross if I don't laugh loud enough. So you got to just fake the laugh sometimes. And he'll send a message beforehand saying that make sure you laugh loud enough. Okay, he's back on the line. Okay, you can continue, sir.
As I was saying, in response to this breaking story, we had Professor Hussein Sherlock Colombo reacting. He's the author of the book called There is a Jihadist Under Every Bed. And this is what he said. There is no doubt in my mind that these two brothers plan to carry out terrorist attacks throughout South Africa, and also that they are members of ISIS. My deep knowledge about terrorism and also my close contact with Israeli intelligence in carrying out research on these terrorists exposed certain conclusive evidence. For example, I warned that terrorist attacks were planned during the World Cup soccer here in South Africa a few years ago. That was about football. So I immediately saw the link with these brothers. Football and paintball. Of course, the common denominator is there. And that is the word ball. So you see how an experienced terrorism expert can put two and two together and get 22. But that's not all. The link between football terrorism and paintball terrorism becomes even more clear when you consider a vital piece of evidence. What is the name of the friend of these terrorists who turned state witness? His name is Ronaldo Smith. Ronaldo, does that strike a bell? Of course it does. Ronaldo is the world's most famous football player. How can anyone not see the link between paintball and football? My intensive knowledge of international terrorism has uncovered another piece of vital evidence. 10 cell phones were found at the home of these terrorists. We were told that these phones were not in working condition. They were dead. I beg to differ. It is my view that these cell phones were not dead at all. They were on standby mode. In other words, they were sleeper cells. Yes, sleeper cells, ready to come alive at a moment's notice in order to be used in acts of terrorism. Only a sharp mind like mine can pick up such important clues. My contacts at Mossad have also informed me that these terror twins intend carry out beheadings next month during the day of Eid al-Adha. Other Muslims also will be carrying out such brutal actions all over South Africa. There you are. So, dear listeners, what do you think of that, eh? This Professor Hussein is really amazing. Brilliant. And now the Commonwealth Games will be held here in a few years' time. I'm waiting to hear what terrorist plots he's going to uncover.
Light at the end of the tunnel.
Now, did you know, Maulana, that experts have discovered that you can determine a woman's mood by looking at her hands. Did you know that, Maulana?
Mm-hmm.
You can determine a woman's mood by looking at her hands, especially if she's holding a gun in it. Okay, here's the last one. Rashid Bhai flew into Amman in Jordan. He was on his way to visit Al-Aqsa, which is next door in Palestine. It was Juma day, so he decided to go early to a masjid because he didn't know what time they started Salah. So he went to a nearby masjid When he went in, he found that it was already full, and the imam was giving some sort of a talk to the crowd. Of course, Rashid Bhai didn't understand a word because it was all in Arabic. So he managed to find a spot right in front, and then he sat down. As the sheikh spoke, people responded in different ways. So Rashid, not wanting to be out of place, he looked at the fellow next to him and decided to do the same. The sheikh spoke something that sounded like there was the word jihad, and the people punched high into the air and shouted, Allahu Akbar. Rashid also shouted like the guy next to him and punched into the air. Every time the fellow responded in some way, Rashid Bhai copied him and did the same. When he said, Ameen, Rashid Bhai also said, Ameen. When he laughed at something, the sheikh said, Rashid Bhai also laughed. Then the imam said something, and the man stood up. Rashid Bhai also stood up. And the crowd made a sound like they were shocked. Rashid Bhai looked back and he saw that everyone else was still sitting. So he sheepishly sat down also, again. After the salah was over and he was putting on his shoes, a man came to him and spoke in English. Hi, my brother, welcome. I see you don't speak Arabic. And Rashid Bhai said, yes, you are right, but how did you know? And the man smiled and said, very easy, my brother. I knew it when the imam said, there is a newborn baby in the Mustafa family. Will the father please stand up?
Akademi, as always, Jazakumullah for your time.
Always a pleasure, Maulana.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.